forget where it is. Oh, there we go. All right, yeah. All right, it's Ian. This is going to be the opening for Geek Speak, obviously, because, well, there's just some stories that just need to be told. I'm sitting here in a pizzeria with a friend of mine, Christina, who I've mentioned once or twice on the show, and we were walking through Manhattan yesterday discussing what we'd like to do someday. And, well, I'm going to turn it over to Christina right now just to let everybody know what we decided and what she finally did. And now I'm a very happy man. So, Christina, do tell.
Well, I thought to myself, since we discussed it, you always wanted to walk up to a random girl and be like, you look like a whore. So I sat down on the bus looking around, seeing if I could find one of these girls. And I see the girl behind me. My stop's the next stop, so I think to myself, this is a good opportunity. So I turn around when the bus stops. I look at her and I'm like, you look like such a whore. You should be ashamed of yourself. And I get off the bus.
You see right there, that is balls. I don't care if she's a woman, that is balls. Episode 41 of Geek Speak. We're ready.
Fellow geek brethren, you have come to the right place for all of your gaming, gadgets, technology, anime, video games, comic books, and anything else you can think of. It is Geek Speak here at SpeakGeekSpeak.com. Ladies and gentlemen, your host, live from Brooklyn, New York, Ian Levenstein. Hey there, everybody. My name is Ian Levenstein, and welcome to Geek Speak here at SpeakGeekSpeak.com. Holy crap, it has been too freaking long since I have recorded an episode of Geek Speak. 1 week in between episode 40 and episode 41, mostly because of unforeseen delays. And I'm going to blame those delays on one thing and one thing alone. And, well, that's iTunes sort of crapped out on me. Yep, it happens. But I am in contact with Apple at the moment, and they are on the case to hopefully be solving the feed problems. For those of you who don't know, and by the way, I gotta say right off the bat, thank you to the folks out there who have stuck with the show even through these troubles, because I've been tracking how many people have been connected to GeekSpeak through FeedBurner. And I gotta say, a lot of folks just immediately switched off of iTunes and went to another aggregator for now. And as long as you guys can get the episodes, I'm gonna put them out. I saw that there were still a bunch of folks out there who were getting the episodes, or at least connected at the same time. So here I am with episode 41. Again, hopefully, very, very soon, the situation with the iTunes Music Store will be fixed. But until then, well, bear with me here, folks. Nevertheless, it's about damn time to get back in the saddle again, and I have plenty of amazing stuff to talk about on today's show. Now, there's a lot of news breaking on what the first story of the show is going to be, and that, of course, is the brand new portable music player and video player that is being worked on. First of all, what's the name of the player? Which of the proposed names sounds the best to me? And also, will this work? Well, they've got some interesting ideas coming out of there, and I definitely want to talk about that on today's show. Also, Singular is in a bit of hot water as of this past week. Some news came out on Friday that Singular is being accused of deceiving their customers. What did they do and what didn't they do? Well, I most certainly want to get into that on today's show. Also, I'm going to have a review of the brand new Opera browser that just came out. That's Opera 9. And whether or not it's worth your time, I certainly do believe it is because, well, I've been using it. In fact, currently, right now, to get all of my tabs up and running here for the podcast, I am using Opera. So far, so good on that front. I'm going to have an in-depth review of all the brand spanking new features out there for Opera, certainly better than using IE, and it's getting up there with Firefox. Firefox is going to have to put a lot out there for Firefox 2.0 in order to catch up with Opera. Also, some news coming out. It's very, very, very possible that AOL might start giving away its service for free to to broadband users. Don't fall for it, folks. Please don't fall for it. I'm going to have my take on this because, oh, God, what a travesty that would be if people start going back to the world of AOL after all this time. And I've got some movie reviews here for you. I've got a review of Superman Returns and of Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. And by the way, I hope you guys enjoyed that little opening that I had there while I was waiting for Pirates of the Caribbean with my buddy Christina. That's just totally awesome right there. Like I said, that just takes balls. Anyway, let's get into the main topics here. I've got plenty of stuff that I want to talk about on today's show. And we're going to start things off with the biggest news, and that, of course, is this Microsoft MP3/video player that is on the rise. This is coming out of Engadget.com. Microsoft planning Wi-Fi-enabled portable media player working on MNVO for next year. Okay, by now it's more or less an open secret that Microsoft is going to shift away from its current model and go straight after the iPod with a portable media player of its own. But we've landed some exclusive details about the new player courtesy of a trusted insider who is a party to some of the discussions Microsoft is having with potential content partners. Here's what we've learned. Microsoft's new portable audio and video player will have a screen that's quote-unquote bigger than the iPod Video, which isn't really saying much, and I 100% agree with that. I mean, it's you can have a bigger screen and really not have the quality. What I want to see is a better quality screen. So it doesn't really matter to me how big this screen is, as long as it has more pixels than what the iPod screen has. And there actually is we're not quite sure whether it's a mock-up or whether it is a picture of the actual system. And there's multiple names out there for this system at the moment. It's Project Argo to some people, and it's Zune to other guys, and it's the X-Boy to others. And Engadget does have a picture here of a player that looks like it's about the height of an iPod, and it does indeed have a bigger screen. It has a wider screen, so it's more like a PSP-style screen. And it's got one button smack dab in the middle, which looks like it's their version of the click wheel, and it has a back button to the left of the player and a play pause button to the right of the player. Chances are this player will be a horizontal player, not a vertical player, when you're actually watching video, because, well, it makes a lot more sense to go that way, because going widescreen, it makes a lot more sense to have a widescreen video the way that this screen looks. But then again, who knows? This could just be a mock-up. We don't know whether or not this is the real deal. Anyway, let me get on with it here. The player will also have built-in Wi-Fi support, so not only will you be able to download content directly to the player, sort of like with the Music Gremlin, but actually participate in an Xbox Live-like social network that will help you connect with other people with similar tastes and interests. Whether that's going to be the Live Anywhere service they introduced at E3, we don't know yet, but we do know the tagline they're pitching for the device combined with this new network is Connected Entertainment. I guess it sort of has a ring to it, but it gets better. And this is the part where I was absolutely floored that Microsoft is actually going to be offering this service to folks who want to get themselves this brand spanking new Microsoft player. And I can barely even read this without being giddy here. To attract current iPod users, Microsoft is going to let you download for free. That's right, for free. Any songs you've already bought from the iTunes Music Store, they'll actually scan iTunes for purchased tracks and then automatically add those to your account. Microsoft will still have to pay the rights holders for the songs, but they believe it'll be worth it to acquire converts to their new player. Right now, the new player is scheduled to launch in November, but our source also tells us that Microsoft isn't stopping with a Wi-Fi-enabled PMP. They're actually going to launch a MVNO next year using all Windows Mobile-powered HTC handsets. These handsets will let users connect to the same social networks you'll be able to access over Wi-Fi using the portable media player. And again, like I mentioned, I'm going to be linking to two different stories here from Engadget. One of them is the one that I just read, and another one here about Microsoft's quote-unquote Argo, because again, we're not quite sure whether or not this is actually going to be the name of it here. We've had to sit on this for a while, but it's now about time we showed you guys at least one possible form Microsoft's Argo/Xbox branded wireless portable media player could take. Sent to us from an insider working on the project, we're told the device pictured above is indeed a part of Project Argo, and from what we can tell, it definitely jives with the blurry pic we caught a while back. Though if the piece from earlier today is to be believed, this could just be one of numerous Microsoft portals. It's hard to tell just how much larger the screen on this thing actually is, but it does indeed appear to be a 4:3 aspect ratio display, and could be 3, even 3.5 inches wide. Keep your eyes peeled. You know we do our best to have this stuff as early as possible. Again, the thing that floors me the most about this player is the fact that they're going to let you download all the songs you've already downloaded on iTunes for free. Now, those of you who know anything about the iPod, you know that iPods have a security measure in them. Every single song is secure with the M4V format or the MP4 format that they use. So basically, the MP4 is going to only be played two places, on your computer or on your iPod. It can also only be burned a particular amount of times onto CD before you can no longer burn it any longer. You can then import it back as an MP3 to avoid that, but nevertheless, the song itself is only something you can really use with an iPod. The fact that Microsoft is allowing you guys to go onto their network and download every single song you've already had is absolutely huge, because there are folks out there who have gigabytes upon gigabytes of iTunes songs already on their iPod. And there are also people that aren't too happy with iPods in general. I mean, I myself included here. The reason why I got my Creative Zen Vision M was because I just was not happy with what the iPod had to offer. Maybe if Microsoft had put this out a bit earlier, I might have gone for one of their plays. But then again, it's Microsoft, so who knows how good it's going to be. I hope that this is a good player here, because what Microsoft needs is something that will literally be able to challenge the iPod in popularity and in performance, because the iPods have that niche of the market right now. Microsoft hates seeing Apple succeed. This has been the case ever since the 80s, and it has not changed now. You knew they were going to get in the portable market eventually, because that's how Apple is making its money right now. They're making a lot more money on the iPods than they ever did with their Apple OS and with their Apple computers. So Microsoft is going to try their best to get another one out there. And another part of the story here is the fact that this player, no matter what it's called, the Zune, the Argo, or the X-Boy, there's going to be a Super Bowl commercial for this player in 2007 to welcome the world to the Microsoft Portable Media Player. I don't know about this, because in the past, Super Bowl commercials have not really succeeded in the way that most companies would hope with their portable systems. I mean, the last time we got a portable for a Super Bowl commercial was the incredibly, incredibly failed DAP, or DAP. Portable DAPs by Olympus failed miserably, even though they had major support from their Super Bowl commercials. But again, Microsoft is a sort of company that knows how to advertise, right? They've been doing this for years. Olympus is sort of new on that front. They tried for something a bit different, and it didn't really pay off for them nearly as well as they would have hoped. Microsoft will probably put out the sort of commercial that makes you intrigued and makes you remember the product, and that's what they really need to do here. Because again, to get into the market of what the iPod is already doing, you're going to have to put out a product that everybody wants. If you just put a clone out there, it's just not going to happen. The reason why I went with a creative player was because it did AVIs, it did MPEGs, it did WMVs, it did WMAs, it did MP3s, all these formats that the iPod does not do. Obviously, they do MP3s. It would be very silly if they didn't. But what Microsoft has to do here is ensure that their player does AVIs and MPEGs and MP3s and WMAs and WMVs. Don't just go with WMA and WMV here, because if you go that with that proprietary format, people are going to be turned off, because not many people would choose WMA or WMV over MP3 or even .mov. I myself would much rather have an AVI and an MPEG than a WMV. It's a personal preference there. I feel they have better quality. Quite frankly, I think it's just a better brand than what the WMV has been able to do over the years. Same with WMA. WMA, nothing against WMAs whatsoever. I would just rather have MP3s, because most of the songs I get are MP3s. I don't want to first have to convert all of my songs to WMA if I do get one of these players. And again, I doubt that'll really happen, because I have my Creative Zen unless it breaks again. If it breaks again, then chances are I'm probably going to end up going out there and getting myself another player, and this might very well be one to think of. Microsoft certainly has a good idea here. The portable media market is the way to go for companies these days, especially the bigwigs like Microsoft and Apple. The iPod, I'm sure there'll be an iPod video, a true iPod video out there soon enough to sort of quench the thirst of folks out there who weren't happy with the iPod with video capabilities that came out a while back. This will be the major competition here. Yet again, Microsoft getting themselves into a major competition, because when is this going to drop? According to them, it's going to drop in November. What else drops in November? The Nintendo Wii and the PlayStation 3. What better way to take the spotlight off of your competitors in another field entirely than to put out an interesting and new product? The Xbox 360 will have been out for a year already when the Nintendo Wii and the PS3 come out. They're going to have to do one of two things when that occurs. They're going to have to drop the price in the Xbox 360, which I wouldn't be surprised if they do. And they'll have their HD DVD player out there soon enough, so that'll be their new content for the Xbox 360. And obviously, they're always updating Xbox Live to put new stuff on there and to get the technology better. But to put out a portable media player, when they're doing it, they're going to take a little bit of the anticipation off of the Nintendo Wii and the PS3. Because again, people go with the new. This is going to be new. Video games are very different than portable media players. I know that. But tech is tech. You put good tech out there, and you're going to get a lot of people on your side. Microsoft got a lot of people on their side with the Xbox 360. If they put out a good product here, they're going to get a lot of folks who went over to the side of Apple back to their side. Who knows how long it'll take for us to actually get Windows Vista? That'll be the question, with how many times that's been delayed. But don't delay this player. If you say it's coming out in November, again, this has not been confirmed yet whether or not it's coming out in November, but if you say it comes out in November, make this thing come out in November, or make it come out in October even. Surprise us all by making it come out early, not late. This could be huge here for Microsoft. I want to see a good player out there. I can't make that clearer. Prove me right here, Microsoft. Let me know that you are going to end up doing what it takes for the first time in a long time. Do what it takes. It's all I ask. Do what it takes. Well, moving on from the market of the portable media player to the market of the cell phone, Singular's getting busted. I love it when companies like this finally get what's coming to them, and Singular looks like it very well might get what's coming to it here. This is news coming out of Yahoo News. Singular has been accused of deceiving its customers. And here is the report. Singular Wireless Corporation promised to provide uninterrupted service to AT&T wireless customers when it acquired that company in 2004. But instead, it nickel and dimed them and degraded their reception in an effort to persuade them to sign new contracts, a federal lawsuit said on Thursday. The lawsuit, which alleges breach of contract and violations of consumer protection laws, seeks class action status on behalf of the more than 20 million customers AT&T Wireless had at the time of the merger. Many paid $18 transfer fees to switch to Singular plans and were required to buy new phones or pay other fees, said the complaint filed in U.S. District Court in Seattle. Everyone who signed an AT&T contract had their service degraded, attorney Mike Withy said at a news conference on Thursday. And this is last Thursday, obviously. So that would be Thursday the 6th, right over there. Atlanta-based Singular acquired Redmond-based AT&T Wireless Service Incorporated for $41 billion. $41 billion. My God, if I ever have $41 billion in my life, I'll be a very, very happy man. In October 2004, and promised in advertisements and news releases that the customers of both companies would see uninterrupted and even improved service as a result of the quote-unquote combined network. Withy argued that instead, Singular stopped maintaining AT&T wireless network facilities. In addition to the accounts of his clients, he cited news articles in which industry analysts said Singular appeared to be investing little or nothing in the AT&T wireless network that breached the contracts AT&T wireless had with its customers, he said. Singular spokesman Clay Owen said Thursday the company had not had a chance to review the lawsuit. He acknowledged the company eventually plans to phase out the older cell phone technology used by the AT&T wireless network called TDMA, but insisted that it is still maintaining that system for now. For now is the main word here, by the way. The overwhelming majority of Singular's 55.8 million customers use a newer GSM system, and many companies no longer make TDMA-compatible phones, he said. Singular spent $6.5 billion on network improvements and integration last year and has budgeted the same amount this year, Owen said. He did not have figures for how much of that was spent maintaining the AT&T wireless network. One plaintiff, Amy Furker, a 28-year-old Seattle architect, said that shortly after the merger, she began noticing that she no longer had cell reception in areas she once did. Over the next year and a half, she said, Singular told her she would have to sign a new contract, live with her current cell service, which was being phased out, or pay a $175 termination fee to get her out of her contract. Finally, last week, the company let her out of her contract without charge, Fruger said. She switched to T-Mobile. On my commute to work, I started to notice I was getting more drunk calls, she said. It's like purchasing a Mercedes and getting a Hyundai. Wow. Hey, Hyundais aren't that bad. I guess I get the point there. Mercedes, Hyundai, very different things. Last month, a California State Appeals Court upheld a $12.1 million fine against Singular for signing up customers faster than it could provide services and for imposing hefty cancellation fees without a trial period. The court also said Singular must refund up to $10 million to people who were forced to pay as much as $550 to cancel their contracts. Five of the seven named plaintiffs in the Seattle lawsuit are California residents. The lawsuit, based on complaints received by the Foundation for Taxpayer and Consumer Rights in Santa Monica, seeks up to treble damages for fees and charges paid by the AT&T wireless customers. Take a deep breath. Whew! Wow, that was a long story. And I did read it all, so yay. This is called phasing a company out of existence. Singular bought AT&T Wireless, and you knew that this was going to be a Singular company from this day forward. Even if they kept the name AT&T Wireless, you'd be getting Singular service. And obviously, Singular, their job here was to pretend that AT&T Wireless was terrible this entire time. AT&T Wireless was one of their biggest competitors, along with Verizon and T-Mobile. The moment that Singular merged with AT&T Wireless, Singular breathed a sigh of relief. One less competitor in the large market of cell phone carriers for them. Which was great. And in the process, they got a whole bunch more of folks that never used to have Singular service. Well, now they were under the Singular banner. What they should have done, is offer AT&T Wireless service for, say, another year or two after 2004 when it was first acquired. Then, after that, or even before that, let their customers know that if they so desire to switch over for free to Singular, they can do so, now that they're under the same banner. And of course, they could, you know, mention that Singular has better service, blah, 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 AT&T's old TDMA-compatible phones are being phased out, blah, 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 and so on and so forth. That's what they should have done. The fact that they ended up charging people is just greedy business. Also, the fact that they expanded too fast reminds me of another company, which I'll be talking about a bit later on in the podcast, and that, of course, is AOL. When AOL first started out, they expanded way too big, way too fast. When that happened, you had to wait forever to get a dial tone, and then a to actually connect. Wow, that was the worst modem noise ever, but you get the point. To connect to AOL service back in the day. Obviously now, you don't have to worry about that, because AOL has since become one of the largest online companies in the world. But when they were first starting out, when they were first realizing just how huge they were going to become, they expanded too big too soon, and their customers had to pay for that in the long run. That's what happened here with Singular, and I really hope they've learned their lesson now, because they're going to lose a lot of money on this lawsuit, because they're entirely in the wrong here. When you tell people that you're going to honor their contracts, when you tell people they're going to honor their service, and when you tell people that their phones will still be able to work, stick by those promises. Even if you hate AT&T Wireless's guts, even if you hate having to say that AT&T Wireless is under your banner and that it's not just all Singular now, it was AT&T Wireless merging with Singular. Not Singular gobbling up AT&T Wireless. The two became one. Smooth transition is something they really should have gone for here, instead of screwing people in the end. And because of that, I'm sure they lost plenty of customers, because as is mentioned in this article, there is a customer who was with Singular, who switched over to T-Mobile because she was tired of the crap. Finally got out of her contract, will never look back again. And it was really stupid of them to go out and degrade the signal in the first place, because when you degrade the signal of any wireless service, you know what that says to a customer? What makes us think that you won't do that on your own service? What makes us think that in order to upgrade to, say, a better plan on Singular, you're not going to suddenly go to the 1999 guys and say, hey, you know, we have much better service on $34.99. In fact, if you upgrade, I'm sure you'll probably not have nearly as many dropped calls, and we'll give you a shiny new phone, too. And also, you're not going to have to worry about your phone cutting out when you go to one side of the room. Yeah. Right. Sure. Likely story. Singular, you screwed the hell up. I hope you're happy now. I hope you're happy now that you've lost plenty of people all over the place. I myself have a T-Mobile phone. Just got a brand new Samsung, works pretty damn well. Wish the camera phone could be a bit better, but that's not really something I'm complaining about too much. My T-Mobile service is great, except for the fact that sometimes when I walk around my own apartment, I lose signal, which is fantastic there. I'd love to be able to get a better service, but I don't know if there's a better service out there than the service I currently have with T-Mobile, because I'm under a family plan, and it's the cheapest family plan. Singular had pretty good service, from what I've been hearing, except for in certain parts of the country. The fact that they all of a sudden decided to screw over many people is a very, very stupid idea. They better not do it again, or they might not be around much longer. And then maybe someday we might be hearing, wow, Singular got bought out by another company. And that company honored Singular's contracts. Wow. Learning from past mistakes, huh? Starting to feel like this podcast is all full of the bigwigs here, but, well, one more story that I want to cover in the world of the bigwigs before I go on to some reviews, and that, of course, is the Opera review and the Pirates of the Caribbean review and the Superman Returns review. AOL is in the news again. What a shock. AOL's in the news again. And of all the news to have, it's this one. And this is reported straight out of Slashdot. And they get their story from Wired.com. And here is the Wired.com news story. I want to get it from the source, as it were. AOL ponders free internet service. America Online, the online unit of Time Warner, is considering offering its services, including email, free to customers who already have a high-speed internet connection, the Wall Street Journal reported on Thursday. under terms of the proposal, which comes amid AOL's quickly depreciating subscriber base. AOL would no longer charge subscription fees to users with high-speed internet access or a dial-up service from another provider. AOL customers with dial-up internet access through AOL would still have to pay a monthly fee of as much as $26, the newspaper said. The journal said AOL's total U.S. subscriber base fell by 850,000 in the first quarter to 18.6 million. At the end of 2002, the company had, ready for it, 26.5 million subscribers. Nearly one-third of AOL's 18.6 million subscribers have already high-speed internet access, and AOL expects that 8 million of its existing dial-up customers would jump onto the new offer. And this is also stemming from them actually making broadband cheaper than dial-up service to try and get people to switch over from dial-up to broadband. Go figure. Lost revenue could be offset by lower expenses, including layoffs in the company's already troubled marketing and customer service departments. Don't even get me started on AOL customer service. There's a reason why I don't have my email through AOL anymore, let's put it that way. Would you like a free month? Okay. Would you like a free month? Okay. Would you like a free month? Okay. I had free AOL for about 7 months after I got rid of my AOL. Then finally, I went to renew the free, and I thought I had renewed it, but instead, they charged me for getting back with AOL, and that's when I officially ended any association with AOL, and I was a happy man after I did that. I felt better. I felt cleaner, actually. I don't know. I mean, this could work for AOL. I mean, most people just want to have, you know, the AOL email service and the other options that you have on AOL. For instance, having, you know, built-in AIM and all that is fun for a lot of people, so they don't have to open up a separate AIM program. I myself would just rather have AIM than AOL itself, because AOL is a much clunkier service in the long run. Also, some people like the AOL games and like the other things you can get through AOL, AOL TV and all this stuff. Frankly, I could care less about it. AOL is past its prime, and they're realizing that. That's the reason why they're even considering putting their services up for free, because, well, people are turning elsewhere. Verizon DSL is so popular right now, there is a waiting list for Verizon DSL. There are parts of the country where you just can't get it. You're going to have to wait about 6 months for somebody to come to your house and give you Verizon DSL. I'm glad I got mine when I did, or else I'd probably be on that waiting list right now too. AT&T DSL. Even AT&T DSL, it's not nearly as fast as Verizon, and that's the reason why I switched away from AT&T DSL, but AT&T DSL did well for me. Never went down. A couple times it did go down. It was back up in a matter of hours. It does a good job, and a much better job than AOL has really ever been able to do, in my eyes at least, and in the eyes of a bunch of different people also. There's a reason why people are changing away from AOL. Also the price, too, because, well, AOL's price for broadband is usually a bit more expensive than the other guys out there. Similarly, $26 for dial-up? Are you kidding me? Is it still 1993? I forgot. 1996 or something like that? Because that's not a price you should be paying, especially for dial-up. You can tell that they're really trying to phase out dial-up, because that's ridiculous. I really hope that AOL just dies. There, I said it. I'm happier now, actually. I'm a spiteful former AOL user. I see no reason to still be using AOL. Plenty of other services out there. Just don't go back. Please don't go back. If you're with AOL right now, think about it for a second. Think to yourself, why are you still with AOL? Is it just because everybody knows that your email address is at AOL.com? Because there's plenty of ways that you can forward your email address. You could set it up where somebody sends an email to your AOL account and it forwards it off to your other one, and eventually you phase it out of existence. Plenty of services out there that can do that. Either that, or just mass email all the folks that would know your email address and tell them, I've switched my email address to Gmail or to Yahoo or one of the free services or even one of the pay services. You get a Verizon email account when you go to Verizon DSL. You get an AT&T account when you go to AT&T. Don't use AOL, folks. Please, for the love of God, don't do it. Okay, I'm done. In the immortal words of Stephen Colbert, moving on. It's review time. It's been a while since I've had to review a browser because, well, you know what? Lately, it's mostly just been small little tweaks here and there. You know, a couple of security updates and all that. Well, Opera has finally released Opera 9. Now, I got this about a week and a half back, and since then I've actually been using it a lot. Opera used to be my secondary browser. It's no longer a secondary browser, it's a companion browser now. When I don't want to use Firefox, for memory reasons mostly, because when I'm editing, it's usually the best time when I end up using Opera, because when I'm editing my podcasts, well, Firefox takes up a lot of memory, to the point where I only have 512 megabytes of RAM on this computer. I'm hopefully going to be upgrading it to a gig sometime in the very near future, because it's really starting to get ridiculous here. When I use Adobe Audition, there's nothing else I can use, basically. In fact, I'm recording this podcast in Audacity. I'm going to do my editing in Adobe Audition, but I'm recording the podcast in Audacity just to see how it sounds, because Audition's known to skip every now and then because of how little memory I actually had to spare. Audacity uses a lot less, that's why I'm using it. Anyway, Opera 9. What is it about Opera 9 that makes you go out there and get it? Well, right off the bat, integrated BitTorrent. That is outstanding. Now, I've tried out a couple of different BitTorrent downloads using just Opera. I recently switched over to BitComet for my BitTorrent needs, and BitComet does a pretty decent job, I gotta say. Only thing I could use inside of BitComet is that it uses Internet Explorer for its browser, so I'm not really going to use any of the searches that it has built inside of BitComet. I'd much rather it be either Opera or Firefox, but that's a complaint all on its own. Different story for another time. The BitTorrent inside of Opera doesn't seem to take up much extra memory, which is certainly a plus. I downloaded an episode of Rescue Me that I needed to watch that, well, I downloaded it in Opera, and I didn't even realize at first it had the BitTorrent stuff, because I just thought that Opera 9 at first was just going to be another version of Opera, not many changes. But then I got that link that said, would you like to download this inside of Opera? And I'm like, you're damn right, I want to download this inside of Opera. And, you know, I did it pretty fast. The BitTorrent speeds are not nearly as fast as they would be in a client like BitComet. That's what I noticed right off the bat. It takes it a little while to garner up some of that speed. But once it does, then you can get it to work pretty fast. But again, it can take a while. Another feature inside of Opera 9 is the content blocker. Remove ads or images. It does basically the exact same thing that AdBlock does for Firefox from a website. All you got to do is right-click on an image and go down to Block Content, and you'll be able to block any sort of content on a page, which, yet again, it's great to not have to download a plugin or an extension to be able to do this. It's integrated right into Opera. Add your favorite search engines, right-click on the site's search field, and select Create Search from the menu, and it's just as simple as that. So you're not only just there with Google anymore. You can do a whole bunch of other types of search engines. This is something you've been able to do inside of Firefox for a while now, and you can do it inside of Opera as well. Thumbnail previews is really, really handy. When you thumb over a tab, you'll be able to see exactly what that website is going to be. Similar to what you have inside of Firefox if you download a particular extension, but this is yet again integrated inside of Opera. And that's the thing that I'm realizing about Opera. All these things that you've been able to do through extensions with Firefox is all inside of Opera right off the bat. So you're just set up. The minute that you download Opera, you're set up. You can tweak your themes and all that and your preferences, but you're bound to have a good experience right off the bat. It supports widgets as well, so use the widgets menu to discover new widgets and access your favorites, so you can have widgets inside of there if you want. You've got the beautiful transfer manager and the pop-up locking as always. You can do mouse gestures inside of Opera, which is yet another Firefox extension that you've been able to do for a while now. A trash can, so that if you accidentally close a tab, you can retrieve it from the trash can, which is similar to what Tab Mix Plus does with Firefox. Honestly, there's not many bad things you can say about Opera 9. I mean, it does a lot of things that I've been wanting to see inside of browsers for a long time now. And again, it's right out of the box. It took me about, oh man, it must have taken me at least a couple hours to get my Firefox working the way I wanted it to when I had to reformat my hard drive. Luckily, I still had a lot of my preferences saved, but to actually track things down, to make it look exactly right, to make it feel exactly right. That's what I had to do. That's not what you do in opera. With opera, you open it. You can move your tabs around and all that. It's very easy to do that. You can put your tabs on the bottom or the top. If you like them on the bottom, you can put them on the bottom. I myself like them straight on the top. The only thing that I'd like to be able to do inside of Opera that you can do inside of Firefox, well, I'd like to be able to put themes in here, because Opera's a very minimal browser. I'd like to see some pizzazz in there, but that's a minor thing there. The fact remains, it's a damn good browser. I'm going to give it a 4 out of 5. That's as high as I can probably go with Opera, because again, there's still a couple things inside of Firefox. I've gotten so used to Firefox in general that it's still my browser of choice. However, it's really nice to see that Opera is improving itself as it goes along. It's not just putting out the same thing over and over again like a certain Microsoft company that I know. Yeah, I know IE7's going to be good, blah-de-blah-blah-blah, I don't want to hear it. The fact remains that Opera is certainly worth a shot. If you haven't been an Opera user before, you might want to give it a chance. You can find it over at opera.com. Just download that baby and give it a go. And who knows? You might end up loving it from there. Sticking with the theme of reviews, I gotta review some movies here because a lot of movies have come out over the past couple of weeks that I've been anticipating for a long time. One of those movies is a movie that is years and years and years in the making, and that, of course, is Superman Returns. Now, what's important about Superman Returns is that pretend that Superman 3 and Superman 4 never happened. So Superman never had to deal with synthetic kryptonite and Richard Pryor, and he never had to deal with, I'm ridding the world of nuclear weapons. Yay! Yay! No, that never happened. Dear God, Superman 4 was awful. Anyway, this takes place about 5 years after Superman 2, and it's pretty much inside of that continuity. Unlike Batman Begins, this is working with the previous Superman movies. Batman Begins starts a brand new Batman mythos. Clark Kent slash Superman, played by Brandon Routh. Movie starts off. By the way, there will be a couple spoilers in this. Let me start that off right here. Spoiler, 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 spoiler. Anyway, movie starts off just like Superman and Superman 2. You see Krypton explode, and then from there, the opening credits. Exact same style opening credits as in the early Superman movies. I smiled so wide when I saw that. Because when I was a kid, I loved the Superman movies. And they just felt so real to me. You know, it really felt like a guy could fly. In Superman Returns, not only does it feel like a guy could fly, but it also feels like a guy could use heat vision. A guy could leap tall buildings in a single bound. Every part of Superman you can find here. The best scene in this movie, by far, is the scene where Superman ends up reintroducing himself to Metropolis in the only way he knows how, by saving a whole bunch of people. How does he do it? Well, he saves a plane that, of course, Lois happened to be on at the time. What a shock. Really, really surprised that that's the way that this turned out. But, you know, come on. That's the way that the story works here. And also, very nice to see that Peter Wilson's getting work. Peter Wilson was one of the characters that happened to be on the plane at the time. And Peter Wilson from the La Femme Nikita and all that, and League of Extraordinary Gentlemen, which happened to be a terrible movie, but, well, Peter Wilson was in that anyway. Superman ends up saving the plane. This action sequence is Superman. That's the best way to put it. I have never felt more in my life, other than possibly the animated series in the Tim Deaneyverse, I have never felt more in my life like this is the Man of Steel. Wasn't quite sure whether or not the costume would work coming up to the movie, but in practice, it worked really, really well. Brandon Routh looked amazing, and he spoke just like Christopher Reeve. It was scary when he recited that line about flying being one of the safest ways to travel, my heart, it skipped a beat. It was as if Christopher Reeve had been reincarnated in the body of Brandon Routh. That's how much it felt like Superman to me. Like, it felt like those old movies. It's a very timeless movie as well. And this was actually something that was mentioned on the Comic Geek Speak podcast. I'll give them a little plug here at comicgeekspeak.com. They help me out a lot with the Comic Timing podcast. They give me forums over there, so I might as well mention here. On their particular Superman Returns episode, they did mention how it felt very timeless. I 100% agree with that, because you would never be able to tell, except for the technology, obviously. The technology is very 2006 in some points, but you would never be able to tell that this was 2006. Metropolis is in a time warp. The cars look like 1986, 87, somewhere along those lines. The people, they dress in outfits that are a nice combination between the now and the then. Really, you would be able to believe that 5 years have passed in Superman 2 and Superman 3, which this basically is. This is Superman 3. Again, this is Superman 3. To me, this is Superman 3 right here. This is how the entire thing should have gone in the first place. Lois Lane, Kate Bosworth. She was good in parts, not so good in others. I liked her reporter mentality. I liked the fact that, she was able to play a reporter and not just an actress who happened to be playing a reporter. She was a reporter in this movie. She was a bit too much of the damsel in distress for my takes. But then again, Kate Bosworth might not have been the best pick for Lois Lane in the first place. She embodied the part, though. She did look like Lois Lane. In my head, this did feel like Lois Lane, but still, give her about 6 more years, and she'll look even more like Lois Lane. She was just way too young for the part. Kevin Spacey as Lex Luthor, you cannot get a better Lex Luthor than Kevin Spacey. Period. You cannot get a better Lex Luthor than Kevin Spacey. Much better than Gene Hackman. As good, and I'm saying this right now, and I'm surprised that I'm actually saying this, as good to me as Lex Luthor in the animated series. Because that has always been Lex Luthor to me. Because that's the Lex Luthor that I basically grew up with right there. The maniacal maniac. The devious, scheming Lex Luthor. Well, Kevin Spacey is that in spades. Outstanding performance by him. Had it been anybody else, it wouldn't have been nearly as good. They picked the perfect guy. James Marsden, he plays Cyclops in this. Nah, I kid. He plays Richard White. And he does a good job, but dude can't catch a break. Oh my god. James Marsden is the type of guy where you put him in any movie and he will not get the girl. It's just, oh man, I feel sorry for the dude. Although it is nice to see where Cyclops went after X-Men 3, because I'm, for the life of me, I don't believe that he ended up with the fate that he ended up with in that movie. I'm not going to spoil anything, but, well, obviously this is where he ran, and, it's nice to see that he lost his powers and was able to, just walk around without the visor on. All right, fine, enough of the Cyclops references here. But he does play a convincing bow to Lois Lane. I mean, you could see why she would fall in love with this guy. He's a pilot, he's a editor at the Daily Planet, and, he sort of embodies goodness. He's sort of like, if Superman was powerless, this is sort of like what I would feel like in the character of Richard White. He's Mr. Perfect. You can't go wrong with a guy like that. Parker Posey played Kitty Kowalski, Lex Luthor's girlfriend in this. And Parker Posey is always going to be adorable. It's kind of hard for her not to be. She was cute in this movie. She had plenty of funny scenes, and she did her job. Frank Langella played Perry White, did an exceptional job. Sam Huntington, Jimmy Olsen. Here's the deal with Jimmy Olsen. I have never in my life experienced a more annoying person than Jimmy Olsen. Mind you, that's how he's supposed to be, so I guess that makes sense, but Sam Huntington is Jimmy Olsen. He had the part down perfectly. I just wanted to strangle the dude after he talked, because dear God, was he playing the moron in this. And he had a total hard-on for Clark. I'm sorry. The dude just, anything that Clark did was right away gold with him. He wanted to freaking jump his bones. I can't believe I just said that, but that's the way I felt when I was watching it. Like, wow, Jimmy won't shut up about you, buddy, blah, blah, blah. I'm like, yeah, we can certainly see where that's coming from there. Ava Marie Saint plays Martha Kent. Perfect Martha Kent. She was caring. She was heartfelt. She was the mother for Clark Kent and for Superman. You can see where he gets his morals just by looking at Martha Kent And the look on her face when he came back down from the remains of Krypton, you felt so much emotion in that scene. You could tell that this was a mother who hadn't seen her son in so very, very long, and now he was back to stay. And all of a sudden, her life was happy again. Great job. She wasn't in many scenes, but the few scenes that she was in, she did an amazing job. Marlon Brando, back from the dead as Jor-El, and I'm waiting for the extended edition of Superman Returns to come out on DVD, because the extended edition is going to have extra scenes that were not in the cut that was released in theaters, including the Krypton scene, where Superman goes back to Krypton, and there's going to be Marlon Brando in that, and there's also going to be the woman who played Superman's birth mother is going to be in that as well, all digitally remastered and digitally restored as if they were still breathing. And Marlon Brando does a very good job. It's hard to believe that I'm actually saying that, considering that he's, well, I'm dead, and it was all stock footage, but hey, they use good stock footage, so, hell, can't really go wrong with that. And from there, you know, there's only really one other character that I can mention, that it's Tristan Lake, I am totally going to mispronounce this. I think it's Tristan Lake Lebeau. Tristan Lake Lebeau. How about that? He's Remy. Tristan Lake Lebeau as Jason White. Jason White. Oh my god. This is Lois's kid. This is a child who is riddled with asthma, who's fragile, who can throw pianos. Yeah, throw pianos. Here's the part of the movie that everybody's sort of split down the middle about. This kid is, and again, spoilers. This kid belongs to Superman. There's a Superboy in this universe already. And he does not seem to have full-fledged powers, obviously. You know, I mean, they're first developing. But I wonder how much powers he actually will have when he's grown up, even, because, well, he's part human and part Kryptonian. He's not full blood like Superman is. Nevertheless, I don't know how I feel about it. I mean, on the one hand, kid does a great job acting. Also, I love the fact that, you know, this is in continuity for the movies, because, well, they did sex in Superman 2, and this was the results of that. I don't know. I'm gonna have to see the next movie. Really, I mean, there obviously will be a sequel to this. When I see the next movie, I'll know for certain how I felt about Superman having a kid, because it depends on whether or not that's going to take the focal point, or whether or not he's still going to be around, and, you know, Superman will still be doing Superman things. The next movie has to have Brainiac. Seriously, that's the next villain, because after Lex Luthor, in my head, it's Brainiac. I'm sure they'll do a good job with him, but you gotta go Brainiac next. All in all, the movie was everything I hoped for and more. I've seen it twice. The reason why I saw it twice is because the first time I saw it, my mouth was gaping the entire time. I had to see it again. Second time I saw it, as good. See this movie. If you haven't seen it yet, if you're a fan of Superman and you haven't seen this yet, or if you're a fan of comic books and you have not seen Superman Returns yet, get ready to see a comic book movie. Get ready to see something that fits entirely into your head. And if you're a fan of Superman 1 and Superman 2, but didn't like Superman 3 and 4, here's your Superman 3. 5 out of 5, baby. 5 out of 5. See Superman Returns. For your sake, see Superman Returns. I guarantee you, you will not be disappointed. And if you are, oh well. Alright, I just left Pirates of the Caribbean 2 about, it must have been about 5 minutes ago. We're sitting in the restaurant, we're about to eat, and the initial reaction is, holy shit. That is all I have to say right now. I'm going to have a formal report on the train ride home, but that is my initial reaction about 5 minutes afterwards. Let's poll the crowd. Christina, reaction.
What the fuck?
Introduce yourself and your reaction.
My name is Tomas. I was like, what the fuck, man?
Introduce yourself and your reaction.
Name's Dan. Yeah, I still want to punch something.
Why do you want to punch something?
Should I really give it away?
Okay, just say, like, general. Don't actually give away any spoilers, but why do you want to punch something?
It was a great movie, but let's just say it leaves you wanting more.
you'll have more in about 6 months, hopefully. And last but not least, the quiet man, the man who says nothing, so he must get his reaction, name, and what you thought of the movie.
Let go of my shirt.
That's the reaction. See you later.
My final movie review of the night is, well, you sort of heard my reactions there right off the bat. And by the way, I am loving being able to take my Zen Vision M with me and just do my recordings that way. It has a pretty decent microphone on it, but let go of my shirt. Anyway, Pirates of the Caribbean Dead Man's Chest. Saw it when it came out, saw it on Friday. There was an advanced screening on Thursday, but I ended up seeing X-Men 3 for the second time there. And if you want to see my opinions on X-Men 3, check out Comic Timing, which is speakgeekspeak.com/comic timing, as I have an episode on there that I did with David Price and Toby Cook and myself, where we all go over X-Men 3 and how we felt about it, and it was good times, and we all get in-depth on that. So if you want to see my X-Men 3 review, that's where you'll find that. Pirates of the Caribbean, Dead Man's Chest. Pardon my language, but holy shit. Get ready for the spoilers, they're about to come. This is a damn good sequel. You can see why this garnered as much support as it did. You can see why it broke every single box office record right off the bat, because this is an amazing movie. To think this started off as a ride at Disney World, to think that that's where this all began, because what a story they have actually gotten themselves here. I give yourself a bit of a plot line here. Once again, thrown into the world of the supernatural, Captain Jack Sparrow finds out that he owes a blood debt to the legendary Davy Jones, captain of the ghostly Flying Dutchman. With time running out, Jack must find a way out of his debt, or else be doomed to eternal damnation and servitude in the afterlife. As if that weren't enough, Captain's problems managed to wreck the wedding plans of a certain Will Turner and Elizabeth Swan, who are forced to join Jack on yet another misadventure. So at this point, Will Turner ends up having to track Jack Sparrow down, tracks him down to an island where everybody on the island thinks that Jack is their god, and they're willing to set him free from his fleshy form. And that means dead. So yeah, right off the bat he needs to go in there and save Jack Sparrow's ass, which is what this movie's all about. Jack Sparrow gets in danger, they save Jack Sparrow. Jack Sparrow gets in danger, they save Jack Sparrow. Will gets in danger, they save Will. Elizabeth gets in danger, they save Elizabeth, and so on and so forth. However, there are major twists and turns in this movie that I did not see coming. And that's what I love so much about Pirates of the Caribbean. It always manages to pull at least one shocker that I was not expecting. This was no different. I certainly, spoiler, 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 I certainly did not expect Jack Sparrow to down with the ship. And I certainly didn't expect Elizabeth to go up to said Jack Sparrow and give him a smoochy-smoochy. Because, well, she's head over heels for Will, and yet her wild side still says, wow, Jack Sparrow is kind of cute for a perpetually drunk pirate. And see, that's the thing. Elizabeth is a pirate in nature. The pirate's life is for her. The fact that she's not always on the seven seas upsets her to the point where there's really not much she can do but wish she was there. Jack Sparrow is there. And so, she goes for Jack. Will is along for the ride. Will might have a lineage of pirates, but he's not a pirate. He might have it in his blood. He might be able to suddenly know things about the seas that other people would not know, but he'd rather be on land doing the horizontal mambo with Elizabeth. We all know that. Davy Jones is played by Bill Nighy in this. And Nighy does such a good job. Even though all the CGI is on there, you still know that this is Bill Nighy underneath there. And what an outstanding job. And in the next movie, it has been announced that Keith Richards will play Jack Sparrow's father. Holy crap. Because totally emulating Keith Richards in the long run here. So Keith Richards playing his father is going to be great. But major plot twists in this that nobody would have expected, especially the ending. That final scene, the cliffhanger, is up there with a cliffhanger in a Back to the Future movie. You're just waiting for that next movie to come out. I cannot wait for this next movie to come out. The fact that we have to wait another year or so really pisses me the hell off because, well, it's almost all done already, and yet we're still going to have to wait another year. Also, make sure to stick around past the credits. There's a cute little scene at the end that is worth sticking around for. It's nothing that, you know, adds to the plot, really, but you get to find out where one of the cast members ended up, and it's not a cast member that is a typical cast member. I'll just leave it at that, just for some intrigue for maybe the few people out there who haven't seen Pirates of the Caribbean that are listening to this review. It's cute. It's very, very cute. This movie does things that the other movie did not do. The other movie was mostly just pirates. This movie goes all over the place. You've got the Aborigines, you've got the witch doctors, you've got random islands, you've got Jack believing that he's a god, or people believing that he's a god at least. You've got everything in here, and yet it still has all the fun and excitement that you found in the original. Pirates of the Caribbean Dead Man's Chest did everything I wanted it to do and more, just like Superman Returns did. It's been a good summer for movies for me. Another 5 out of 5 here. It did everything I wanted it to do and more. And what better thing can you ask for out of a movie than that? Go see yourself Pirates of the Caribbean Dead Man's Chest if you haven't. And if you have seen it, see it a second time, because I probably will too. It's wind-up time here on Geek Speak, where I switch things over from the geek side of things to the sports side of things. Yep, even though I won't be doing my show in another couple months, doesn't mean I'm going to stop talking about sports. And on today's particular episode, a little thing called the All-Star Game just happened in baseball. And a little thing called the All-Star Game just happened in the WNBA. Two things I want to mention about both of those. All-Star Games mean nothing. Absolutely nothing. Even though Major League Baseball wants this to quote-unquote count, even though home field advantage for the World Series is decided by the All-Star Game, the fact that the fans still pick who stays and who doesn't means that this means nothing. If you wanted this to mean something, you would have the writers pick. You would have the same people who do the Hall of Fame do the All-Star Game. You would have the players factor into this as well, who they feel amongst their peers belongs in the All-Star Game, who they want out there to determine whether or not they'll be able to get home field advantage. Also, the fact that the National League blew that lead also says how little they cared about this game, because if it was a game that mattered, they wouldn't have let Trevor Hoffman stay in as long as they did. They would have gone with somebody else. Their plentiful relief squad, they would have gone with somebody there. But instead, they left Trevor Hoffman in because it's the All-Star Game. You do things like that. Then Mariano Rivera comes in, does what he's supposed to do, and closes the game for the American League. And the American League gets home field advantage yet again. Even if, by some chance, whoever ends up in the World Series on the National League side has a better record than the American League guys, too bad, because the American League has home field advantage. How difficult would it be to just let the people with the better record get home field advantage? How difficult would that be? Apparently, pretty damn difficult. Because Major League Baseball is being very, very stubborn here. If they just let it be decided by who had the better record, like it is everywhere else, in football, in basketball, in hockey, then they wouldn't have to worry about making this All-Star Game mean something. Because you know that they tacked this on just to make it mean something. Because the ratings were down, they wanted people to come on back. I myself tuned into the Home Run Derby. Other than that, not too interested in what happened there. Meanwhile, in the world of WNBA, they had their All-Star game, and they couldn't even score 100 points each. That's not exactly too appetizing right there. I know it's women's basketball, but you know what? Women's basketball is still basketball. If you can't score 100 points in an All-Star game, in basketball, that's laughable. I'm sorry. WNBA might have some good stuff every now and then, but that was not a good All-Star game. I tuned in to a little bit of it, and I was bored. I was bored to tears. No. Just no. I know that defense is important, but keep scoring. Do it. Do it. Come on. You can do it. You can do it. But apparently they couldn't. So, eh. What are you going to do? WNBA's All-Star game means just about as little in the long run as the Major League Baseball one. So, yeah, All-Star games are exhibition. Sorry, folks. That's the way it is. That was the windup. Now here's the pitch every single Monday for the rest of the summer on Brooklyn College Radio, 1090 AM, and streaming the web at brooklyncollegeradio.org. You can hear me, Ian Levesine, along with Jason Green, the ghost of Michael Hornstein, the ghost of Captain Jack Sparrow, and the ghost of Marlon Brando on the Sporting Goods. And before I go, I have some emails that I'd like to read for you here before I forget, and I'll start things off here with an email I got from Christopher Nielsi. And this is a guy I met over at Anime Next. Hey, Ian, this is Chris from Anime Next. I'm the guy who came up to you to talk to you after the various Cartoon Network shows panel. Sorry I wasn't able to make it to your other panels later in the con, but I went to your site and just listened to your latest episode, and I'll be listening in from now on. It's kind of a shame you can't make it to Otakon this year, but I'm sure Baltimore Comic Con will be good too. Also, thanks for the advice about formulating a pilot episode. He's actually looking to get together a pilot for a animated series he has in mind, so best of luck to him. When my friend and I go to the SVA summer program later in July, I'll be sure to get some more information with what you told me. Good luck on the future Geek Speak episodes. Chris Kerbifer Niozel, and you can find his work over at tta.fireball20xl.com. P.S. I also heard on the latest episode you were trying to become a voice actor someday. If you're interested, I can look for an available character for you to play in my Flash movie series. Dude, if you can find somebody, I'll be more than happy to take a role, because, well, voice acting and voicing, period, are things that I am very much into, so I certainly would love to be able to have that opportunity there. So, hey, if you can hook me up, thank you kindly there. Also got an email this week from Sharon DeVries, and Sharon DeVries writes, "Hi, I stumbled onto your site via podcastdirectory.com and enjoyed your site and your most recent podcast. I hope you enjoyed your vacation, and congrats on your 40th episode." Thank you kindly there, Sharon. "My husband and I launched a new website 2 weeks ago that you may be interested in checking out, www.bargainjack.com. It's a tech deal site where we feature the top 21 deals we find each day after searching through hundreds and sometimes thousands of deals from merchants like Newegg, Amazon, Buy.com, and so on and so forth. The concept is clearly nothing new, but we aimed to deliver a very clean design that will hopefully appeal to folks who are overwhelmed by data and ad overload on some of the other great bargain sites. And the deals on our site are truly good deals. We also feature blog-style commentary along with each day's deals, sometimes offering insight into caveats of certain deals, i.e. returns must be sent directly to manufacturer, etc., etc., or highlighting our personal experiences with certain products. Gizmodo mentioned us on Friday in their blog over at gizmodo.com/gadgets/deals/such-a-deal-maxtor-200gb-4-40-184591.php, which I will very much put in the show notes. Breathe. We're also uber excited to have been mentioned in the Geek Brief TV vodcast yesterday. We're mentioned in the second half of episode 38, and that's over at geekbrief.podshow.com. If you enjoy our site and think your readers slash listeners would find it useful, we'd love to see bargainjack.com featured on your site or in one of your podcasts. We would be happy to link back to your site also. Enjoy your holiday weekend, and thanks for your time, Sharon DeVries." Well, Sharon, thank you very much for the email. I did enjoy my holiday weekend, had a great time, had a nice barbecue and all that for July 4th, and I would certainly love to mention www.bargainjack.com on my podcast. That's www.bargainjack.com. www.bargainjack.com. Really, really good website, I gotta say. Plenty of great deals on there, too. Because, as she mentioned, a lot of websites have done this in the past, but I really like the design of this thing. Nice and simple, and that's what I like. So, Sharon, thank you kindly for the email, and I hope everybody checks out Bargain Jack in their free time. And I think that's pretty much going to wrap it up for today's Geek Speak, so I believe it's time for those happy little credits. The email address for Geek Speak is speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. That's speakgeekspeak@gmail.com. Don't forget to check out those forums over at speakgeekspeak.com/forums, and don't forget to vote for Geek Speak on Podcast Alley. The links will be in the show notes and on the main page. Hopefully, yet again, the iTunes situation will be cleared up very, very soon, and once it is, don't forget to send in your iTunes reviews on iTunes if you want to give GeekSpeak a piece of your mind. Let me know exactly what you think of the podcast. I'll be more than happy to see that. Also, don't forget to check out my other podcast, Comic Timing, over at speakgeekspeak.com/comic timing. Myself, David Price, and a whole bunch of others talking plenty of great comic stuff on there. I'd like to thank the Pod Show PodSafe Music for the music for today's show. You can find that out over at music.podshow.com. And also want to thank Anamanaguchi for providing us with music for the show. You can find his stuff over at myspace.com/Anamanaguchi. And I certainly want to thank Deluxe, Jeffrey Tosser, Pixie Trick, Shonen Samurai, and Zircon for the opening and closing theme to Geek Speak. You can find their stuff and a whole lot more over at ocremix.org. And I'm going to be wrapping up the show a bit differently tonight. You'll have the usual end theme and all that with the lovely, lovely bloopers that usually end up following this. And then I am going to have what might end up becoming a regular thing here on GeekSpeak. I get a lot of spam mail. And, well, I got inspired to turn one of my spam mails into a little medley, which I like to call Spam Mail Medley. So you might find those at the end of some of the episodes of GeekSpeak, and sometimes maybe even at the beginning. And you might even hear it done Shatner style every now and then. I don't know. I'm a crazy guy. What can I say? And after that, you're going to be able to hear something that I found over on YouTube, which I will then link to on YouTube. And that, of course, is All Your Snakes Are Belong to Us. This is something that I just totally needed to tack on to the end of GeekSpeak here. I'm sure everybody out there is going to love this. It's a take on All Your Bass Are Belong to Us. Of course, done with snakes on a plane instead. And I'll link to the YouTube movie on the website. Other than that, I'm Ian Levinstein. Have a great week! Enjoy your geek! And we'll see you next week. Yeah, hopefully back to regular weekly episodes of GeekSpeak next week. Take care, everybody. Geek Speak, episode 41, in 5, 4, 3, 2, 1. It's Ridge Racer! Ridge Racer! One plaintiff, Amy Frucker. Oh, God, I can totally get this. Here we go, alright. That's good to be back. How stupid do you have to be to degrade the single? Degrade the single. Wow, that's like some music I listen to. You know, they degrade this. Anyway. So Superman had never had to deal with synthetic. The word is synthetic, Ian. Synthetic. There you go. Synthetic. Work with it. Synthetic. Beautiful. Before I switch things over from the I'm done.
There's a little ditty I like to call Spam Mail Medley. With background laughing by Meg. Let's roll this thing. Good humorness, bomb-headed ale brewer, elk nut, lab ring, shining oak, grass school, agent bent, Sawyer middle horn, crossword puzzle, vowel, body school, wage, pearl round, soul, trader square, headed, ubiquitous, ulcer, good yard wisen, hardened bonnet, grass bee eater, opera mad cathedral, music temper spoiled, thin-legged snow deep black tuck bear skull. gold.
You are such an idiot.
I am such an idiot.
Summer 2006, snakes on a motherfucking plane.
Snakes.
Please don't be alarmed. Remain in your seats.
How are you, gentlemen? All your snakes are belonging to us. You are on your way to destruction.
Snakes.
You have no chance to survive. Wait your time.
Everybody listen! We have to put a barrier between us and the snakes!
All your snakes.